Okay, this is Dave Beck, and I've been on a dope science show with the dopest girl I ever known in my life, San Diego. And her name is, say it again.
Science Steph with Steph.
Science Steph with Steph. That's right. She's a great lady, guys. I'll be tuning into her show.
My name's Damien Swaby, and I'm here on the Dope Science Show, the best podcast out there today.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Dope Science Show, episode 5, with artist, entrepreneur, mental health advocate, and TED Talk speaker, Mia Walker. I met Mia in an awesome group.me group for ambitious women who wake up early. I think it's called like Morning Risers or something like that. It's a group I found on Twitter. So basically we like text each other and encourage each other and share what projects we're working on. And Mia was outstanding in the group as being super ambitious and energetic. And so I wanted to reach out to her. And she also helped me find more scientists and STEM contacts. So I'm so grateful for that. In this episode, we talk about the importance of STEAM, which is science, engineering, art, and mathematics, and why that's important. We talk about what it's like being a twin, because Mia's a twin, and I think that's really interesting, and you got to ask those, like, annoying twin questions. We talk about mental health and self-care in people of color communities, POC communities. The importance of having a mentor and how to find a mentor. I thought it was a very fun, very, very informative episode, and I really appreciate you guys for listening. I also want to give a shout out to the Vocal Minority Report because they always listen to my episodes and repost it, which makes me feel so encouraged and keeps me going. I appreciate it. And the Cyber Squid Radio Show. They're a pretty awesome science-based podcast as well. You guys should check them out. You can find my podcast, The Dope Science Show, on, what am I on? Stitcher, SoundCloud, and iTunes. If you find me on iTunes, please, please, please like, comment, and all that good stuff because it helps with my the algorithm so that more people will find me. If you guys have any questions or if you want to join the show, just reach out to me. You can find me everywhere. Just look up The Dope Science Show. Thank you guys for listening, and I will talk to you soon.
So, hello, Mia. Thank you so much for coming to The Dope Science Show. I appreciate your time.
Hey, Steph, it's great to have me. I mean, wait. Oh, my gosh. Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
Yeah, no problem. Very, very cool. So, my audience knows, I met Mia on a group me thing. I don't know exactly how it works. It's like a website for like-minded people who are doing something together, and it's like group text or chat, right?
Yeah. Group me is like a messaging app or whatever, and so you can pool people together from like social media to do it. I think that's the best feature. It sort of integrates people in a really cool way. And it was the up early group chat. It was solely
is that
formed
what it's
so
called?
That people
I don't
could...
even know the name.
I only remember because that's how I saved it in my phone. I think the whole original intent of it was like, all right, people trying to be on purpose, how about we start with trying to be up earlier, like at like 7 or 6 a.m. instead of at 8 or 9,
right.
And stuff like that. Just
yeah,
like a purpose-driven group or whatever.
It is. See, I didn't even know the name. I just always refer to it as this group of like awesome people doing awesome things, and I'm like, wow, you guys are amazing.
Yeah.
I found the group on Twitter, but that's just how I refer to it. And that makes sense. I'm up early, so I get to join the group. I met you because you're one of the more active people on the group, I thought, and just good vibes. And I mentioned one day that I had started a science podcast, and I was looking for more women because I haven't had any women on the show, or I hadn't at that time. And you raised your hand and you're like, hey, I think I can help you out. And
yeah.
Then you connected me with Natasha, the neuroscientist. She was on an episode I recorded before. and I'm really appreciating it. You were my branch into more women. So I'm like, yes.
Oh, yeah. I have a friend named Asha, Asha Boston. Not that I'm trying to derail the conversation or anything, but I have a friend named Asha Boston, and she's in New York, and she's the director of A Time Before Kale, which is, like, talking about gentrification in Brooklyn. But also she did this one called – she also did this documentary called The Dinner Table Doc, and it's just showing how people of color are represented in media, women and girls especially, and how that shapes, the way that we see ourselves and how we can better make better informed decisions. And through that one, medium, she's been able to reach and touch lots of people. And a couple of weeks ago, she had a chat for women in STEM, women in science, technology, engineering, and math. And so there was, like, tons of these women out here that are really engaged and love math. They love science. They love talking about the field and how we need to break into it more. So, yeah, there was tons of people on there. And I just happened to also be in tech, so.
You got to send me the hashtag for that chat so I can go back if it hasn't already been, like, storified or either way. That would be awesome.
Oh, yeah, it was, like, hashtag color STEM.
Okay, I remember that.
Yeah.
Hashtag colored STEM. You guys look it up because it was really awesome. I was just like, I put out to the universe, I need to know more women and people of color in science. And then they're like, oh, yeah, there's this chat. And it was just like all these people and all these networks and on Twitter that I just opened up to me. So I was like, very awesome. Super appreciative. I'm excited too. Natasha was really cool, really cool. First time talking to a neuroscientist, and I asked the audience, like, hey, what should I ask her? So we got some really cool feedback. So that was a really cool show, and I'm super appreciative.
Awesome.
But I brought you on the show. Sorry, I ramble. So
it's okay.
But I'm like, I have my bullet points to bring me back. But I brought you on the show because what stood out to me was you were a mental health advocate, and I was like, what is that? And you were incorporating art into, like, your mental health advocacy. And that stood out to me, especially because you're young. You're, like, a woman, and super young at that, and just, like, so engaged, and what you were saying just really opened my eyes to, like, the possibilities of being able to connect more with the community about our mental health and bring in art. And art always brings in people. I feel like it's something very relatable. So with that, can you tell the audience just a little bit about who you are? What you're passionate about and maybe how you got there.
Okay, yeah, sure. And thanks for all those wonderful comments about me. Goodness. I am a visual artist and a mental health advocate from Atlanta, Georgia. I've lived in Atlanta my whole life. Grady babies, whoop, whoop. And my main medium that I use, I draw and I paint, I use acrylic, I use ink and different things like that. And what got me into this lovely intersection, I talked about it in a TED Talk I did recently, Happy Place, Art of the Outlet. And basically, most of my work focuses on how creative expression helps you to cope and deal with different things like depression or anxiety and PTSD. It's incorporated with different strategies for you to develop your emotional intelligence or overcome certain issues or addictive behaviors and just overall calming sort of a thing. I want to be a art therapist, and so I'm working towards that. And I needed a bridge between graduating because, life of millennials, we'll graduate from, whatever school, we'll matriculate or what have you, and then try to figure out what life is supposed to be about. I graduated with my degree in studio art, and in between trying to figure out, what's the shortest distance between A and B, what can I do to work towards, doing things more strongly with mental health. I had my own episodes while I was in school was dealing with anxiety and trying to make that adjustment, because college is really an institution and a culture. And in communities of color especially, we don't always emphasize that or focus on it. We just sort of tell our kids, hey, go to school, get the good grades, and you'll get a good job when you get out. And that's not necessarily our reality, especially if you're going to a school that's not, you know, necessarily diverse or informed in how it deals with different things. And, you know, we just culturally having to make those sorts of adjustments. And I don't, you know, I wanted as much as possible to help other people of color be able to adjust and things like that. So I just went on this path of mental health advocacy. What are the issues? You know, what is my focus points are access to different resources, the availability of those things. Can you find, you know, a traditional therapist if that's what you're looking for, or a non-traditional path if you needed just a support group or peer support or a healing circle or something like that. And so I've built and come up with some different things to try to help with that. There's the Happy Place Project. It's a quarterly newsletter sort of a deal, and it's a journaling retreat. So it's a really great way to get people into investigating their own feelings, investigating their like mental state, and being able to keep track of how they're really doing and progressing in a fun way, in a creative way, so you don't feel like, you know, I'm just pouring out my life here to someone who doesn't understand, but being able to keep track of those things. So the Happy Place Project is designed for you to just get some quiet time, get away, take a focused break, about 10, you know, take maybe 15 minutes per daily exercise to just decompress a little bit. So that's what Happy Place Project is for, and it's like 7 days of just rejuvenating, recharging yourself in that very vital way.
And is that like a actual physical retreat that you go on?
I am working on developing it so it is one where you physically leave the space that you're in, but for right now it's virtual, so
that's cool, though.
It's just like it comes in your inbox, you know, sort of a deal. It's like it works like a newsletter, but it includes like music, you know, prompts to meditate.
Oh, I want
to
join.
You can totally
join.
I can definitely post the link to it. I can post a link to it, or just like send it to you in an email. You can release it to your audience after. And then, gosh, I didn't think about this beforehand. I'm kind of rambling a little too, but I blog about these things. So I talk about them. I do public speaking engagements at community centers and things like that. I've partnered with a couple of groups, like Integrative Mental Health Network in Atlanta. The integration of faith-based mental health help. And so they do workshops and different things to help leaders get better at addressing different needs in their community. So I do the speaking about this thing, but I also just kind of write about it. I have Tuesday Tea, the inspiration for creatives and entrepreneurs and people that, you know, might have a little bit more burnout, or caretakers and empathetic people, and all, you know, all those sorts of things. And then Thursday, Therapy Thursday is just like a highlight of a particular issue, or how do we address this, or so just different things like that, self-care and all of that.
Very cool. So you're busy, and it looks like you're hitting your points as far as finding resources, making people, increasing access. Like, for instance, you touched on being in college and having your first episode with anxiety, and I can relate to that because, you know, when I went to college, I was already like a very anxious person my whole life, so I can't say college initiated it, but it was like in college I lost some of the anxiety. I did, but it just also.
That's great.
Yeah, I did. I lost some of the anxiety as far as being more outgoing because I had extreme shyness. And so, and the reason why I was shy is because I always thought that people were always judging me, and that they were looking for what was negative, and then I would just like, that would just like take over my thought process. And so I would just shut down and try to be as small as possible so that nobody would like say anything.
Oh, man.
And so I didn't speak, you know.
Wow.
unless someone spoke to me first. You know?
Totally get it. I mean, especially for women of color, I think that culturally speaking, we're shown or taught to, like, take up less space. Like, a very common thing you might hear growing up is be seen and not heard, or that isn't ladylike, or just this focus on being very respectable and demure and being able to carry yourself in a very particular sort of womanhood. And sometimes that really doesn't line up with your personality or your schedule or
right?
being really real about what's going on with you. And one thing I'm hoping to be able to do through the different projects I have going on and partnerships with other people continuing to have these sort of dialogues and encourage it is to disperse and dismantle this whole culture of silence that we have about our issues, you know? Like,
right.
You might be taught that being resilient means not speaking on your struggle, or my struggle isn't as bad as someone else's, so let me just put on the happy face and go
right.
and push myself into my work further. And that just produces more burnout.
All this doubt and insecurity, and I've been locked inside the house all the while you hold the key, and I've been dying to get out. That might be the death of me, and even though there's no way of knowing where to go, I promise I'm going, because I gotta get out of here. I'm stuck inside this rut that I fell into by mistake. I gotta get out of here. And I'm begging you, I'm begging you, I'm begging you to be my escape.
Definitely, you know, and I would have, you know, throughout my childhood, I had little nervous breakdowns. It would just hit me one day and I would just cry, you know, or I just would be like, I can't do this, you know, like if it was like the first day of school, I was like, it's too much pressure. I need to go the second day of school.
I
was just like, I can't do it. And so, but in college, I like opened up more, but I still had a lot of anxiety and I didn't seek really any help. I just kind of struggled, you know, I just struggled and I didn't even know where to find, you know, someone to talk to. I knew that they had those resources on campus, but it was like, it was just very intimidating to go and raise your hand and say, hey, I need help, you know, and
I was like,
and how much is this going to cost, you know, and not feeling like, how do I even, like for me, I finally did go because I was failing in my classes and I felt like I needed to at least have a doctor's note to say why I was failing. and when I went, you know, I didn't feel like, I don't know, I just didn't feel like it was something I could continue. Like, I didn't feel like there was just, I don't know, for some reason when I met with the therapist, it just felt like very much not very engaged. It was just weird for me,
okay.
You know. But I'm not saying I would never go again, but it was just like, I didn't feel like I needed it. You know, I just thought to myself, you know, I just didn't feel, you know, but then I didn't really get help for my issues either. You know, I just lived. And since then I've done personal development and that helped a lot, like reading different books and learning about myself and emotions, you know, just educating myself. Outside of a, you know, like an institution setting.
Exploring,
like, life. Like, that really helped me. But when I talk to other people, especially people of color, about, hey, maybe you should get help, first thing they say is, where, how much? If they even will consider going, you know?
Exactly. Like, I think that, you know, sometimes there's this big gulf of, not even sometimes, there is this big gulf of distance between, like, the leaders, the scholars, the leading scholars in the mental health field, and then the mental health professionals, and then there's you, the person needing the actual help. And sometimes it be so clinical and so traditional in their model and approach to things that cultural sensitivity just doesn't step in at anywhere.
Yeah.
And considering different barriers, like, you know, we're more likely not to get treatment because, you know, higher insurance rates or not having the proper coverage with, you know, co-pays taken care of so you can be able to attend and get these sorts of visits, or not being able to find them anywhere because beyond your campus counselor, like, there may not be a treatment center or a clinic, like, near you, or who's going to check me in, or even just this aversion because we might have this antiquated view about therapy and such. Might have this antiquated view that this is going to be me in this clinical office with white walls, laying on a couch, talking about my feelings, and then they charge me like $100 an hour or something like that.
And you're like, that's for white people.
Seriously. I've learned that we have our own coping mechanisms, you know? Some research I did while I was building another project, some research that I did showed me that recently that there's some research I did recently because July was Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. In case you all didn't know, like, it was, you know, the big deal, the time to put the spotlight and the focus on, you know, different groups of color and why there's all these mental health disparities and different things like that. And one thing I found out was that,
maybe you found out something about access or something.
Thank
about
you.
Meaning.
Okay, gosh, I'm sorry. So it's total blank. Yeah, we're way less likely to seek traditional treatment. What's more important to us is that we have interdependent networks, and, like, your family and your trusted friends, your mentors, your coworkers sometimes, would be some, or a pastor or a trusted family friend. Those are people that you might go to and sit down and communicate and talk about your issues with, rather than a circle of perfect strangers, for example. Like, group therapy would be possibly more effective than just meeting with this particular professional. Or maybe I want to go exercise or find some self-care alternatives. We're more likely to go the non-traditional route. You know, we just have an aversion to institutions in this country. Ahem.
For a reason. There's a good reason for that. Some people think of Tuskegee. Some people think of all kinds of dark science and mental health. Remember, those are the settings for a lot of horror films.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you know, like, it hasn't really ingrained, like, this is a safe, welcoming, positive place to go to, you know?
Not at all, especially when you consider, like, these old movies and the prevailing image of it in pop culture right now is, you know, shock therapy and nurses with big needles and straitjackets, and it's just a really frightful sort of way to try to get someone to approach, you know, care. I think that when you make it more community-centered, and so one of those things where it's like, you know, if I'm better, then those around me are better. And so we collectively as a unit can make each other better by building up this mental health and this changing this idea and definition of resilience, you know, in our group settings. Then, you know, we get the support that we need. Not feeling supported within those sort of environments is just another major barrier. But I think that's something that can be alleviated by building, like, very genuine and authentic relationships.
And when you say that, you know, that's not to say, like, say for instance, and I'll come back to art because that's just waiting for me. Say for instance, I know one of the major complaints I hear people say is, I have no one to talk to. I feel very isolated because you. I have had people try to, you know, they want to talk to me, be their friend, and they're looking for a therapist type of setting. And you know, you can only take so much as a friend or family member. Not everyone is like naturally inclined to be like a great listener or a soundboard.
Oh, yeah.
You know, even if they love you.
Yeah.
And so then. There is some benefits to being able to reach out to, you know, a soundboard, a therapist that, you know, is more traditional as far as clinically being used. But if you were to get that, which would be awesome, I know people are like, okay, well, maybe they're beyond the cultural differences because a lot of times those people don't look like us, you know. If we were able to have some sort of online or some sort of network where you can engage with people, you know, via maybe text or Skype or something like that, or so a mentor who can help you. Okay, so this is the type of medical plan you'd want to have because you would want to be maybe paying a little bit more up front so that you don't have to pay co-pays, you know, like some sort of mentorship. You know, if there was something like that, that would be ideal because people don't even know where to start, you know?
Yeah. There's actually a couple of different groups and apps and things that are being developed as we speak to allow for people to connect with the right right sources of help at the right time. If you're in the UK, there's this app called Recover. That's being developed so that black people can be able to connect with, you know, like black therapists, for example, or find the different networks that they need. There's Talkspace. There's different spaces that are being developed so that people have somewhere to go and can feel like they're connected to more people. I know for me, social media plays a huge role. I'm a part of more communities online than offline at this point, and I love it. You know, there's different ways to connect and find the different folks that you're looking for. I would love to see where and how there are different places where there's physical groups being put together as well.
Yeah.
I know... Part of all of the things I've been looking at this summer has been to work towards developing this sort of an app to let you do this. My latest project, goodness gracious, my latest project is this app called Jamii. It comes from a Swahili word that means community, society, body, and family, and unit. Means all of those different things come together, and so it's that it comes to the crux of this need for these different networks, and it would allow you to be able to find specific sort of help, whether that be like traditional therapist or couch time or what have you, or peer support groups like a recovery group maybe, or even just like if you had a parent or a guardian or someone that you love had Alzheimer's, you could go here to get specific help, you know, with coping and dealing with that. So just having the right folks around you, to do those different things or attend events where these things are, you know, being celebrated. Like House in the Park, for example. So yeah, it's being developed as we speak. So just keep an eye out for it in your app store.
Right? I will be like, I will definitely share it because this is something, you know, whenever someone actually opens up to you about needing help and then you're like, I don't even know how to send you in any direction, you know, that would be fulfilling a need. So I definitely look forward to it. And if you need help or, you know, I'm sure we would be able to crowdsource technical help, anything, you know, to get the app up because it needs there, you know.
Oh, yeah. And thanks. Yeah, awesome. That'd be great. Currently pulling together the different resources to build a database that would be like, you know, to source all the different contact information. But essentially, it'd be like, you know, like Meetup meets Talkspace. you know, so being able to find what you need, but locate it in your area or locate what's, you know, what's close, what's it within a couple mile radius, you know. So thinking about starting it based in like Atlanta, Georgia, just so I can make sure, you know, logistically it's down, different things like that. And then expanding, yeah, you know, nationwide. But yeah, it would be awesome to be able to get this thing off the ground, because mainly people want to be able to find the help, you know.
Right.
I have a friend that started a knitting circle, for example.
What I'm sorry?
Oh, I mean, well, it could be a simple, you know, it could be, you know, very specifically like this is people with anxiety, or it could really just be like, hi, I'm starting a knitting circle.
Yeah.
I would love for people to join.
Yeah. Just like safe places where you can connect with people and be yourself and be open about, I mean, talk in a setting, even be, you know, just having a community you feel that you can do self-care with, you know.
Yeah,
that would be great.
Exactly.
Like, wouldn't it be cool if
exactly
someone's like, just get out and do a drum circle, or let's, you know, a jogging group for people, you know, like other,
yeah,
not just so broad, but very specific to this app, because this is for people looking for mental self-care, you know?
Oh, yeah. Get your self-care needs met, too. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So I'm excited. Yeah, to keep me updated and, you know, yeah, keep me updated, because then, you know, you never know what connections, people, interest and support to get it going, you know. I think it could be very great, especially if you just, you know, use Atlanta where you're at, you know, in your community, get it down to, you know, a science, and then it could be replicated in communities around the country.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I have no doubt in my mind this, the growth potential for this thing. And not just because it's like, you know, something I'm trying to make. It's not even about being lucrative. It's really about building the community. It's something that's really huge, passion of mine as is.
And
yeah,
that's awesome. That is really awesome. And I can see art events being incorporated into that, because what, you're into art therapy. So you always have to be drawing a line between, I'm sure, a bridge or arrow between your mental health and self-care and thinking art in some artistic,
oh, yeah,
way. What is, you know, your creative outlet? So how did you discover that? How did that become your thing, you know?
It's a funny story. So, well, of course, there was my own, like, mental health struggle, and then seeing other people that possibly also have this struggle, you know, in and out of school. And, like, I think for our first years, our first couple of years there, like, we would, you know, on Fridays, if we were off of work and stuff, we might sit down and color together or draw together, and not just because we're artists, but because, like, it's relaxing. So there was that, but I was on this, like, soul quest sort of a thing. It's really funny. I went to New Zealand, and
what?
By the way, yeah.
Lucky, so lucky.
Yeah, that's, oh, well, thanks. definitely an opportunity you should take, because the country is beautiful, and the air quality is out of this world. And the food's amazing. But, you know, we were just, it sounds so stereotypical, we were just in the mountains, you know, at this place called Lake Taupo. And
Lake
we're just
Taupo?
In the mountains.
Did you say Lake Taupo?
like Topol, like Topo, but Topol. And so,
oh, I thought you said soulful, like soul and then full.
We might nickname it that. Why not? So we're just like, it's this pristine location with this crystal clear water and there's mountains everywhere and it's majestic and all this cool stuff and doing this these mindfulness exercises. And I'm like, you know what would be great to integrate this, you know, integrate mindfulness and, you know, emotional intelligence and all of these different things together in a practice that helps other people do what I already like doing, you know?
Right.
Finding a way to use my art to help people in a very tangible, concrete way. So not just maybe making work that you can look at and say it's pretty and it makes me feel things and evoke emotions and different atmospheres and whatnot, but being able to take it to another level by practicing. Teaching other people how to use creative expression techniques to shift through what is, you know, going through their minds at the moment. It's especially key, in my opinion, it's especially key for people who have, say, severe autism or a social disorder where it's like speaking about or like dealing with certain traumas so that speaking on these issues is extremely difficult and maybe even triggering again. So being mm-hmm. able to depict things with, you know, maybe a color like red or different things like that so that you can speak to those things and communicate those messages and see, get down to the depths of what's, you know, the root of what's going on in your mind. Definitely
That's
great
amazing.
For like veterans and elderly people and those with like Alzheimer's and different things like that. And
right.
even small children.
And have
so,
you,
yeah.
Especially, yeah, because a lot of times it doesn't always fulfill you to be able to like verbalize what's going on. Sometimes it just needs to come out in another outlet that's not filtered by language, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And creative outlets in general just can be fulfilling in and of themselves for you to just say, like, I made this. My hands and my imagination produced this, you know? So even mm-hmm. in just that sort of medium, it's a positive thing. It's positive reinforcement. You know, it can help raise your self-esteem or different issues that you're struggling with if you're doubting yourself. It's like, wait a minute. I made this really cool and awesome picture. I'm really a capable person who can produce something that's of value and of worth and is just nice to look at. And I'm productive. I'm a member of society. This is great. You know.
Yeah, it's a releasing feeling. Sometimes I'm not necessarily a visual artist, but I've embraced my creativity in however it comes out. Like, I just acknowledge it as creativity, and so it becomes my art, you know? And, and that was good for me because I used to think, oh, to be an art, I felt like I had to fit in some category. I'm a painter. Actually, I only do stick figures, and, you know, I'm like, it was just like I felt like I was looking for some society's category of what an artist was, and then I realized, you know, that I don't have to have that. I can say, you know what? Anything could be my art, you know, anything. But I will say that visual art is very, you know, it engages different aspects of your brain and, you know, those have different benefits. I was reading this article about they did an experiment and to see how quickly or how much your cortisol levels will decrease after just 45 minutes of like art. And it didn't matter like what skill level you were on or anything. After 45 minutes, like everyone's cortisol levels, which are indicators of your stress level and leading to anxiety and other things, like they all were significantly reduced just by coloring. Or drawing for 45 minutes. And it didn't matter, you know, whether you were an artist or just like someone who just picked up a pencil for the first time, you know?
Wow.
I thought that was really amazing. You know, And yeah, I thought that was really amazing. And I think that's, even though we don't always have science to back, like with evidence and experiments to back what's going on, you can a lot of times see this the markers in society. Because think about how popular coloring books are, like for meditation now. Like that's super trendy right now, like adult coloring books.
Oh yeah.
You know?
I can't. Yeah, I've seen them everywhere. You can find them in any kind of bookstore. You can even find them in like the dollar store now. It's crazy.
Yeah, I haven't used any yet, but they're beautiful.
Oh yeah. The process of just designing something, you're definitely spoke on something I've looked at. You know, how just specific how different creative outlets might, you know, spark different things going on in your mind. And I did cover this like a little bit more extensively in that talk, Happy Place or the Outlet. But let's see, different, for example, let's say that you have an instrument. It doesn't matter. It could be a drum. It could be your hands clapping. It could be like a clarinet or something like that. But for you to listen to music or start trying to play music, it also stimulates the same part of your brain that you use to do math. So you're helping your potential in other areas when you learn how to do music. You're also, you know, increasing your potential for being able to solve like math equations and things like that. Fun facts. And let's see, writing, being able to write poetry and different things like that, you're making linguistic connections. So it's making you better at, you know, being able to speak well or do science, run different science experiments and be able to make these sort of computations and do complex critical thinking. So it just makes you a more flexible brain, literally. It makes your brain a little bit more flexible in your thinking when you use creative outlets. It's proven by a couple of different studies.
Definitely. And it's just wonderful to like have a integrative or holistic approach to the mind and the body overall.
Yeah.
You know, this is just one aspect. I listened to your TED Talk, and spoiler alert, you did mention, you know, the mind and body being connected, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so that means, you know, we should exercise anything that inspires you, you should pursue it. You know, for art, and that's why STEAM is becoming a more trending term versus STEM. There's competing arguments, but the argument behind STEM, which is science, tech, I think science, tech, education, medicine, people, and art. So it's STEAM. I said that out of order, but I'll put it in the link. But basically, it's the argument that, you know, we need to incorporate art with our science, because the same problem solving and visualization, the curiosity that it takes to go from a hypothesis to like an experiment to a conclusion, and it's the same skills required to be, say, an artist. You have, you know, you have to conceptualize, you have to think, and then you have to create something, you know?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes, like, whether you're making a picture or you're writing a story or you're presenting a play, at some level, you're, you know, even at the most basic level of something, you're definitely problem solving. And so we all need the ability to problem solve and think critically and fine tune those areas, you know, for everyday life decisions and making better judgments. So
exactly. So
definitely start picking up a pen or an instrument.
Yeah. Or dance, or, you know, but yes, but that mental, you know, being the creative aspect of science, the creative aspect of art, they're very closely related. So, isn't that surprising that art is also good for your mental health and that it can be used as a tool for your mental health as well? I have an off-topic question.
Awesome.
You mentioned in your, or I'll let you tell me, you mentioned something about being a twin. I always find twins very interesting, so I'm going to annoy you with a couple of twin questions.
That's fine. I love my sister. Hi, Kaya, if you ever listen to this, and you will because I'll make you listen to it.
So are you guys identical twins, or what kind of twins?
Oh, no, we're fraternal twins. So, like, people say we look alike. I think we just look like sisters. I don't think we look like twins. And, like, there's this ongoing joke that no one ever seems to get. But I'm just like, if we were identical, which one of us would we look like? And people are always like, you would look like each other. I'm like, yeah, I know. But, like, whose features would we have? Because I could look like me or I could look like her. You know.
Right.
Ha, ha, ha.
Like, which one is it going to be?
Yeah. Definitely. But, yeah, we're fraternal twins. I think we sound alike and we make similar hand gestures, but, and facial expressions, but beyond that, like, we don't look alike.
But you guys have the same birthdays, you know, and you're a twin. So do you feel like your identity is closely tied to being a twin? Or do you feel like you have your own unique, separate, you know, identity?
We're really different. We're really different personalities. I think we've gotten a little more, we've begun to share more qualities as we've gotten older. But I think we directly would choose different interest points so we wouldn't compete. For example, Kaya's a really great actress, in my personal opinion,
awesome.
Of course. Unbiased opinion. She's a really great actress and writer, a really great writer. And she's not really that bad as a speaker either. And when we were younger, she would capitalize on those things. And I chose quieter, more background activities like writing and drawing. So there's things like that. We are really distinct people, though. We totally don't have the same taste in hardly anything.
So it's basically for you guys, you're just like regular siblings who just happen to have the same birthday and be the same age.
Somewhat. I think that there's some things that people attribute to twins that might actually have some truth. I don't know how much scientific validity it has, but I will say this, you know, sharing a room with someone from literally conception onward until you're like adult is definitely a different sort of a bonding experience. There's this like twin EST or whatever, where you know what the other person's feeling or thinking, or you can predict what the other person's going to say or say things at the exact same time in the same way, in the same you know, cadence of voice.
Yeah.
That definitely happens more often than not. especially when people ask us like very specific sorts of questions of like, you know, like, it was in a movie Double Team, The Catcher at Best. There are these two twins, Haley and Allie or something like that, and they were on this basketball team, and this guy came up to them and was like, you're doing that freaky twin thing again. And they looked at each other, and they're like, what freaky twin thing? And that would be the thing.
Yeah.
That very
See, that would be awesome.
So much.
I wonder if that happens, like, when you, like, say you're out at a party and you're like, do you guys both think that guy's cute? Do you both give the side eye to that one person?
Actually, I think we're more likely to give the side eye to the same person than we are to, like, the same guy.
That makes sense, since you guys are so different.
But it's fun. I mean, we're across the room for each other or even in the same, like, space, I think you could definitely tell we have a synergy. I think one hobby that we share is cooking and dancing. We like Latin dancing, but she likes merengue more and I like salsa more.
Awesome.
or cooking. Like, I'm really a little bit more of a baker, so I like to bake desserts and things like that, and she'll just make every other kind of cuisine. So we share more than we separate.
They just come out in different outlets, that's all.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That makes it interesting. That's really cool.
the girls showing love while the boys be catching feelings. Once you see her face, her eyes you'll remember, and she'll have you falling harder than a Sunday in September. Whether in Savannah, Kansas, or in Atlanta, she'll walk in any room, have you raising up your antennas. She can fly you straight to the moon or to the ghettos, wearing teeny shoes or in flats or in stilettos. Illuminating all that she touches, I'm the sparrow. A modern day Joan of Arc, call me a pharaoh. Classy, sassy, put you in a razzle-dazzle. Her magnetic energy will have you coming home like glassy, singing ooh. Break it, baby, electro, sophista, funky, lady. We the kind of girls who ain't afraid to get down. Electric ladies, gonna scream out loud. Electric lady.
Did you have any mentors growing up as far as what led you, or was it just like, how did you end up in college? That's always a question of people. Like some people, you know, everyone else went to college, so it was just like that, you know, but even with that, say for instance, that's your story, but who, did you have a mentor in college? You know, what was your type of support group or encouragement?
Man, I had a nice circle of support, actually. And I'm thankful for that. Thank you for all of you. I'm going to just shout you out real quick. Let's see.
Yeah.
I definitely had some teachers that made an indelible impression on me. But as far as my family is concerned, we're really strong on education. My mom has always pushed for us to, you know, go further, go higher, achieve more. But, you know, and learn the things while you've got the time and the ability to learn them, you know, because there's a space
really
and time in
one.
Your life, space and time in your life, like right now being in your 20s, there's so much you can accomplish and do without and learn about yourself before you start jumping into like long-term relationships if you want to, if that suits you, without jumping into like certain particular obligations that you get when you get older and you have a family and things like that. So there was always this push, like go to school. It was like an unspoken expectation, but I'm pretty erudite anyway. Like I just like learning. I like learning. I think there's a term called a professional student, and it's usually pretty disparaging. Like you're always in school, you're changing your major a whole bunch of times and stuff. But I actually think that we all really should try to be lifetime learners, because as long as you're willing to learn something new, develop a new skill set, pick up another language, like there's nothing that you can't do. Now, as far as the thing is concerned, I had several. I learned that you actually can have a mentor for different purposes, so you don't just have to have one. It's like the best friend thing. You can have more than one best friend at the same time for more than one.
Right.
Let's see. There was Angela Pfeiffer. She's a minister, and really well spoken person, a really great writer, and I think she was a teacher and a nurse as well. So she was my next door neighbor. We've done lots of fun things together. I really miss you, and I miss our Christmas trip just to go just to do shopping. So there were different things like that. We do different activities together. I had several advisors really, at school, my art department, at Agnes Scott College, our arts and our art history department are actually integrated, where in most schools they're separate. They're totally separate things and separate buildings. We were all encouraged to take this interdisciplinary approach to art and art history, like acquire the different things that you're learning in your other coursework and apply it here, because it is all integrated. History is informed by politics, is informed by philosophy, is informed by religion and all the other humanities. So it was really a well-rounded way of approaching things. I had Ann Beidler, who taught me how to make prints. I know I'm not the most precise person, but you definitely taught me a couple of things about precision there. And I definitely took some of the things with me, like mono printing is my favorite thing to do on top of a painting. It's really great, really fun. There was Nell Ruby. I love you so much in so many different ways. I love your personality and your quirks and the fact that you dye your hair a different color every couple of weeks. And I learned a lot from Dr. Sadler. She's really, like, the mindfulness thing, I feel like she just took it to another level. She's a very generous-hearted person, very giving, very patient, and got me to like portraiture, which I could do, but wasn't super into, and was able to start exploring different kinds of things, and incorporating a performance aspect into that project and everything. So different people along the way have shown me some different things about myself and my interactions with them.
Wow.
And just pushed me, they all as a department pushed me to keep going when I wanted to drop out and different things like that. So thanks for hanging in there.
That's amazing. I'm so happy that you had that type of support. I wonder, beyond being, you know, incredibly lucky to have that, maybe it was because you were so open. You were so open to people and you put yourself and you engaged with them. I would say that makes a big deal. Like, a lot of people, they don't even know where to start to find a mentor. You know, like, how do you find a mentor? And maybe it's like finding a friend, you know?
It is a lot like finding a friend. I will say this. I acquired another mentor in the last couple of months, actually, in the last year. Hi, Miss Lisa. Love you. So part of it, I think the very base level is, and the most fundamental starting point is, to acknowledge that you need help in an area. You have to start with being able to take a critical look at yourself and where you are in your life and where you want to be. And so you have to know that you need help and want help, and this is a weakness or an area I want to get stronger in or make improvements on or explore at a deeper level than I'm at right now. If you remain on the surface about the things in your life that you care about, or you take on other people's aspirations and dreams as your own and never focus on what it is that you care about or have passion towards, then you might not have a mentor. You might not actively seek those things because you're not going to consider that you might need help in this. And I learned the hard way, despite the fact that I had a pretty extensive support network, including lots of really great friends, I didn't know how to ask for help. And I've actually learned out once I left school how to be professional about emails or solicit the advice I'm looking for, or, hey, how about we do lunch or coffee or tea? So I guess that would be the next step, you know, ask for the help that you need, and then figure out what help you need, then figure out who it is that might be able to provide that to you that you can readily gain access to. Who has the life that you want to live, but who is sitting in the seat that you're trying to get to next? You know, who is doing the things career-wise that you might want to step into as an arena for yourself, or who's already shown like efficiency in this particular area? It could, your mentor could be your next door neighbor. It could be your friend. It could be someone who's already been 10 years in the industry that you're trying to break into. It could be all of those things. But just try to make genuine relationships with people. You might want to pick their ear, pick their brain, or, you know, get a listening ear. This is what I'm doing. This is what I'm trying to do. This is what I hope to accomplish. Would you like to help me in this way? But have points of contact. Send them a muffin basket if you have muffin basket things in your area, or an edible arrangement on their birthday, or just
ooh, them.
Develop a rapport with someone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe you can send them gifts and stuff, but just try to develop a rapport with someone. So it's like, you know, when you don't always have to ask for someone to be a mentor. You could if you want to, but try to, you know, develop something organically. Maybe you don't even have to ask. Maybe it'll just fall into place. Like, it'll just be someone you're really able to speak to on a regular basis and talk about your goals and things. But in order for them to effectively help you in life, you have to be willing to continuously put yourself out there and talk about what's going on, and not just your highlight reel that you share on social media, but also like your struggles, you know?
Yeah.
Be willing to do that. I've learned to do that. I got so much more help when I said I was struggling with something. Like, hey, I don't know what's my next step, or I don't know how to start setting these goals, or what should be, you know, my starting point with this project, or should I go in this direction? Like, don't be afraid to ask a lot of pertinent questions. And I'm sure they'd want to answer them, because people love to talk about themselves. They love to talk about what they're trying to do, or where they're going next, or, you know, or ramble.
Very true. ramble for sure. And I appreciate you saying that, because if I look at all the mistakes I've made in life, it's always because I was like, I'm going to do this by myself. And I just, you know, was in my isolated bubble. I never saw a guidance counselor at my college until, like, my last year of school. Maybe, like, you know. And,
oh, wow.
And then, because it just never, I was never, like, asking for help or using resources. I just kind of just did things, and I was wondering I even graduated, but anyway, so I remember I was like, oh, I want to be like a teacher, and to find out, oh, I should have decided this like 2 years ago based on how much money I have left in my financial aid, you know, like all kinds of things. And I just felt like, oh man, why didn't I do it, you know? And it's a reoccurring pattern that I'm still working through, but I'm really appreciate you sharing that you have mentors, how you got them, because the people I see who are living the lives they want to live or accomplish the things that they're passionate about, they all had some sort of mentor.
Oh, they did. I mean, you got to understand that you can't go it alone, because someone always knows something more than you do. Someone always has more, there's always more. There's always more to learn. There's always more to learn. There's more to study. There's more to teach, too. So,
and don't be afraid, people. don't be afraid, right?
Don't be afraid, but just be flexible in your approach to something, you know? Maybe plan A needs some tweaking. It doesn't have to necessarily become plan B. You don't have to lean on a plan B, but just be able to be ready and, you know, available to tweaking your plans just a little. You can change direction at any point, and you never know whether the direction you're about to head in is going to be like it might be the better one for you. Fun fact about me, when I started school, I had a 5-year plan. I had a 5-year plan to do art and biomedical engineering in 4 years.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. That was my plan. That's what I wanted to accomplish, because I wanted to use my brain, use a hands-on sort of field to help people and be innovative. And I still entered technology just a different way.
what happened to biomedical? You know, I couldn't let you go without asking.
My last 2 years of high school, I just, like, was researching fields to get into that were just kind of not the customary path. I really didn't – I loved art enough to study it and still love it, and I didn't want to give that up. But I also wanted to, you know, I wanted to be able to be – practically helpful. I didn't necessarily see me spending the rest of, you know, I didn't necessarily see me spending all of my time, you know, with animals or, like, I love science. I've always loved science. I guess I have to backtrack a little bit. I use both sides of my brain pretty fluidly. I really love art and things like that, but I also really love science. I'm just a big geek, I guess. And biomedical engineering appealed to me because from what I understood at the time, they're the people who created different instruments or devised different instruments to help integrate with people's lives better. So maybe the machines that, you know, separate blood particles and plasma, not the centrifuges, but the other ones that put plasma into people's bodies and different things like that, or and just I wanted to help develop those sorts of instruments. So, yeah, it was just like I want to put things together and take things apart.
Right.
As the base of it.
Yeah. I wonder if you still could in the aspect of maybe you're more design-oriented. You know, you have you're more into the design of, say, the instrument, but not necessarily the mechanical aspect.
Yeah.
You know, like my daughter, she built a robot called Pain, and she was super psyched. Oh, you know, put it together,
cool.
Cut all the metal and spray painted it, and just came up with all these ideas of the design of the robot. And so I was like, great. You know, she's so into it, and I put her in a robotics class. So I put her in a robotics class, and I thought she was going to love it. And she was like, all we talked about was coding, and she was like, it just wasn't the same. It was kind of boring, you know? And I was like, oh, man. I was like, well, maybe if you were in a longer program, you would have got to interact more with the coding aspect as well as the design. But I realized, if you're building a robot, you need a designer. So it's okay.
Yeah.
If you have an interest in some science field, but you're more on the user experience or the design of it.
Yeah,
know?
Actually, I am. It's been an interesting journey this past, like, 6 years or so. I just thought about it. It has been 6 years. It's like, yeah, it's been really interesting to see. Sort of, it's not vague. I don't think it's a vague goal to say that you want to help people using art and science.
It's not vague.
I don't think that's vague at all. It's just that you've got a plethora of options, and I just think it's really interesting the journey I've taken to start being able to do more user experience design and research.
Oh, that's amazing.
And different things along those lines. That's how Johnny was created. I was doing some coursework and doing lots of research to begin with. So I was like, well, I know that this is a need, and how can I address it? And how can I make sure that whatever I create is solving a problem? So doing more work in that would be awesome. I just have my fingers in multiple pots. But isn't that how you develop multiple streams of income anyway?
Right? Or just a completely, like, fulfilled life, you know?
Yeah. Like, why could
forever
you could pick five?
Right. Forever a student, you know, just focus sometimes on one aspect more, you know, fulfill a goal in that, and then switch your focus to another aspect, you know, be free.
Yeah.
You know?
I anticipate living a long and fruitful life.
Oh, so
making
optimistic.
People smile.
Good. Good. I'm glad you feel that way. So I do this thing in the podcast where I say, hey, pick three songs that you have to come off the top of your head right now, and they're going to be the soundtrack for your podcast. So go.
Oh, okay. This is great. I have to think of the names of them because I can hear them right now. Of course I can.
And you can always give me the link if you can't remember.
Okay, cool. Let's see. What is the name of this song? I can hear it in
my head.
Sing
the chorus. This sounds familiar.
I know.
What's the artist? Because sometimes you can put in the artist in Google and then, like, one line from the chorus and it'll come up.
Oh, okay. Okay. I have titles now. Electric Lady from Janelle Monáe and Solange, definitely.
Okay, so Electric Lady.
Yeah.
By Janelle Monáe, right?
Yes. So Electric Lady by Janelle Monáe. Happy by Pharrell, because why not?
Yes, that's fine.
And let's see. There's one song I've been playing repeatedly. Oh, Be My Escape, Reliant K.
Okay, Be My Mistake by who?
Be My Escape.
Oh, Escape.
By Reliant K. Yes, and I can probably actually even just text you those too.
Yeah. Sounds cool. Because I have poor phonemic awareness. So sometimes I cannot understand what people are saying if I'm not familiar with the word. I'm like, what?
I've got to
what?
Get better at enunciating.
No, it's fine. It's fine. It's me. But I appreciate your time. Where can people find you online? Like your Twitter handle, your Instagram, anything, a video you want them to find, a blog, and then I'll also put in the show notes.
Okay. You can find me on all of the social media at Maya, M-I-A, underscore A-N-I-K-A, Maya Anika. Just search for me and you'll find me there. I have a blog called Spectrum, Exploring, Expanding, and Creating, where you can hear me speak on all the things I've talked about today, more in depth. Art, MayaAnika.wordpress.com. I'll send you the link for that as well. And also, of course, have a store where you can buy artwork.
For sure.
Definitely. And that's also MayaAnika.bigcartel.com. I'll send the links for those. MIAANIKA.
Just like that.
Yeah. You can find me anywhere.
Very cool. Very cool. Is there anything that we didn't talk about that you want to talk about, or I'm like, anything that I missed?
Let me see if I have like one last like final takeaway thing. I have to step back outside, checking on the puppy. let's see. Yeah, I think I have three things I want the audience members to do besides look at my stuff in their regular life.
Yeah.
Let's see. One, start keeping a list of things to be grateful that you're grateful for. Just three things every day. Whenever you start feeling panicky, overwhelmed, upset, pissed off at people, want to cut somebody out, take a moment, pause, and write down or put it in your phone or tweet it, three things that you're grateful for. I promise it'll be a perspective changer for you. That's one. Two, drink lots of water. Stay hydrated. Your brain needs water. Your body needs water. And you'll be less sluggish and less impatient with people if you're better hydrated.
Two.
And, you know, cleanse your body of all the kinds of toxins, and you just need it. You'll run better. You'll be more efficient, I promise. Sleep. Get plenty of rest. This team no sleep business is really toxic to your mental and physical and emotional health, so stop it. You don't have to hustle hard, that hard, to the point where you're no longer getting a proper amount of rest. And adults, like young adults, actually need, like, 10 hours of sleep, not 8. You need 10. Try to set like a deadline by like midnight. That's when I'm going to try to be done with things and start winding down for bed, if not earlier, so you can get up in the morning and enjoy the sunrise maybe, or get a smoothie, or just spend a couple hours in your day like not freaking out about your email. Let's see. Yeah. Gratitude, sleep, water, and dance. I don't care I don't care if you have 2 less feet. Just dance like you have nobody watching you, because it's
nobody's
incredibly
watching
freeing.
You.
Just, no one's watching. Just every day. Or maybe once a week. Dance like there's no one watching. Play your favorite song, even if it's a sad song, and just dance your heart out. You'll feel so much better. But either way, I guess the fifth thing, I guess the fifth thing, just take focus breaks. Every day that you are doing something or not doing something, even if you're relaxing, take 10 to 15 minutes that you are devoted to one particular activity where you have no devices going on, you have no phone, no computer, maybe you're playing some music somewhere or you're sitting by some, you know, sitting in the, walking through the park or sitting by the water or wherever you are, like take a break to do something super constructive, fill out a Sudoku puzzle the old-fashioned way or something, but just relax your brain, switch gears for like 10 to 15 minutes a day, change your life.
Thank you so much. I'm trying to do all of those things already, and I'm glad that you are trying to get that word out, because those are some simple, basic, free things that you could do that immediately change your life. Like the whole grateful thing, that is actually how I beat my anxiety, how I became like a more alive, living, interactive person. Is when I realized you could, you know, when I get anxiety, I guess I'm kind of used to it, but most people think I'm very relaxed and chill, and I am most of the time, mm-hmm. but I do have anxiety, right. And when I do get it, it's usually triggered by some political thing or just opening my eyes to the world a little bit too much, and then I get anxiety. I'll be grateful, and I'll be in the moment, and I'll just, like, stop, and I'll thank God for every moment, every breath, and it just becomes this, like, thing that I do, and it calms me because I realize I'm living in this very moment, and I'm grateful to be living, and I, you know, and it's just, and I just breathe into it, and it, like, it calms me, and then I'm able to, like, do things. So I'm glad you brought that up, and the water, super important. Water and eating on a regular basis, like, that helps, because you get anxiety when you get low blood sugar and all those, like, metabolic things. They affect your mental state as well. Sleeping, super important. Like, when I am short on sleep, all my bad habits come out at full force. Like, I have no impulse control. Like, it's bad.
Nope. Not
bad. You know, and I'm not abnormal. I'm sure a lot of people are out there crazy just because they're not doing the basics, you know. So I appreciate you calling that out, because if all they do is take away from this conversation to eat, sleep, dance, and thank God, or whatever you want to thank for your life, then that's, like, priceless.
It's, like, the least expensive self-care in the world, and it takes, like, less than an hour to do any of those things.
Right? And it's amazing. Can you stay on going out? I always try to record my intro for the next show, so if you can just say your name and that you're here on the Dope Science Show, and then, you know, anything you want to ad-lib, that would be great.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Let me
clear your throat.
I gotta think of a snippet to say. Hey there, this is Maya Anika. I'm with Stephanie at the Dope Science Show. Start over. I had the sentence in my head, and I went totally out of order. Okay. All right. Okay. Hey there, everybody. This is Maya Anika, visual artist and mental health advocate and speaker of the Spectrum blog, here with Stephanie at the Dope Science Show. And you should be here too. Go STEAM!
Yeah! Thank you so much. Like I said, we're going to end the show. So I will definitely look forward to following up with you, and if I can get any follow-up questions, I'll send them your way as well.
Awesome. And, awesome. Woo.
Yep. Well, I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Stephanie.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
thank you for listening. What do you guys do for self-care? For me, I go through my grateful list. I take time for myself. I have a happy music list, a happy movie list. So I just go through my routine of how I find happiness. That's what I do. I'm going to make sure I rest. On the next episode, I talked to neuroscientist and all-around dope lady scientist, Natasha Waddlington. She answers questions from the listeners and goes down the rabbit hole with me. It was a great time, and I look forward to sharing that with you guys. So reach out if you have any questions, you want to add to the show, give me your feedback. I really appreciate it. Talk to you guys soon.
Diamond in the back, sunroof top, big in the scene with a gangster lean. Woo-hoo. Diamond in the back, sunroof top, big in the scene with a gangster lean. Woo-hoo. Diamond in the back, sunroof top, big in the scene with a gangster lean. Drive a great big cat.